Log Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. Welcome to the F4L headquarters. I am your host with the most, the F4L icon, Sean Jazz Stevens, here to welcome you yet again to another fun show. I just got done from visiting my son. I had to visit him at work right quick and whatnot, and which is funny because that's exactly what the focus is today. As today on our show, we're going to be, you know, unveiling a new segment called Cool Dads Hang Out at the F4L headquarters. And of course, momentarily, we're awaiting our good friend and returning guest, the great Kim Collins, to come in and join in the festivities. And he will come in and join and talk about, you know, the joys of fatherhood from his perspective, what it's like. And speaking of which, hello, thank you for calling the F4L headquarters.
Hello there.
It's you. Can you hear me?
Hello, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
Wow, how about that? No technical difficulties. This is the third time we've had you, and we haven't had any technical difficulties. We must be getting better at this, huh?
Either that or I'm just good luck because I'm Irish.
You know what? You know what? So am I. That must be what it is, my friend. When you have, you know, I always say, whenever you have two halves, right? You have a half Irish and another
there you
half
go.
Irish. Put them together, you have all Irish. So, good stuff.
Yeah.
How are you, my friend?
So I'm all Irish. Well, I'm all Irish, or an Irish and a half. That's probably what helps.
Me as well, actually. Fun stuff.
Huh.
I would just let
people
know that today you're taking part in our first new segment called Hanging Out, Cool Dads Hanging Out at the F4L headquarters. How does it feel to unveil something new?
Cool. Yeah, it's an honor to be the first.
Yeah, well, you've been a guest multiple times, and you're always good. And plus, I know, you know, I actually, you know, one of the things that I really endure is I'm drawn to fellow dads and parents in general who I think go above and beyond people who I view to be, quote, cool dads. You know, and that's one of the reasons why I think we click so well, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there who have kids sometimes and don't really know what that's like, or let's be fair. Sometimes there's people out there who have kids and, you know, aren't really ready for that, if you know what I mean.
No.
But then there are those who kind of have kids like us who actually love it. It comes with a price, you know. It's one of those jobs that we don't get paid for. In fact, we have to pay more for it. But it's also one of the most rewarding jobs out there.
Absolutely. Like I said, it doesn't take anything to make a baby, but it takes a lot to make yourself a dad.
You know, did you listen to my show on Monday? Is that what happened? I said that on a Monday's podcast. I had a little bit of a ranting episode where I had to address some things. And one of the things I said in preparations for this is that old Tarzan commercial we grew up with, where it, you know, it was one of those PSAs we had in the 80s, which they don't do anymore for some reason. You remember the one with Tarzan and his son, and it said, you know, anyone can have a baby, but it takes a real man to be a dad?
Yeah, there's so many of them running around out there, but yes, I remember that one.
Sure, but that was
the age of the PSAs.
Yes, remember the PSAs?
Oh, God, yeah. Schoolhouse Rocks, This Is Your Brain on Drugs, you name it, man, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's funny, I went to a parade over the weekend. I actually gave the commencement speech for my old high school over the weekend. And one of the things is my old high school, and I know it was different. You know, it's always interesting whenever they ask me to come back and talk to the class. It's like, okay, what do I say new that they haven't heard a billion times? So I try to, you know, mix it up.
This one thing I would suggest is that, remember, you're talking to different people. So if you're talking to, like, the kids, then they've never heard any of your stuff before. So it's okay to repeat and recycle.
Well, at the high school, yeah, you're probably right. Very, very true, very true. At least the high school stuff. Unfortunately, hopefully that's the case. It gets new ears. But, anyway, But after that, they had a parade that night for Flag Day in my hometown, and I thought it was interesting that they would have, you know, graduation and Flag Day so close together like that. But anyway, that's not my criteria. I just show up.
Yeah.
But as I was sitting there on the, I was watching the parade. You know, I saw Sparky the fire dog and Smokey the bear and McRuff the crime dog, and I thought to myself for a second, because, you know, admittedly, this day and age, we all, for the most part, do a lot of streaming stuff, right? Netflix, Hulu, and whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't actually, you know,
it's
really
almost impossible
have time
to avoid it.
Yeah, and I honestly, you know, I find it hard for myself to really commit to sitting down for network television, but I don't remember the last time I've seen any of those people in a PSA. You have a younger person than me.
Oh, God. Let's see. Geez, not recently, no. No.
Nobody really talks. What's that?
It's like they usually do, like, you know, I've seen, like, the stuff now, it's usually kind of, like, politically motivated and stuff like that, telling kids this and that, you know. A lot of it's really good because it's talking about racial harmony and things like that.
Yeah.
Some of it's not so good, but, you know, it's you know, it differs. Like I said, it's not like when we were kids.
No, definitely not.
It wasn't like when we were kids.
Yeah, definitely not. So I'm wondering why, like, all these things. I mean, I see these things walking down the street. I know who they are. But as I'm sitting, I'm like, do they even know who Sparky the firefighter dog is or who McRuff is? As I was sitting there, I actually sang the whole jingle to McRuff the crime dog. I still remember it. Embedded in my head.
Yeah, I remember. I remember all that stuff back when I was Saturday morning cartoons. They used to show them, you know, and they used to show them in the afternoons when you were watching, like, you know, the, you know, after school stuff, you know. They would have they would have those commercials, you know, like, only you can prevent forest fires, you know, stuff like that. And they really don't do that now. It's just kind of like, and I don't know if it's because less kids are doing what we did when we were kids. I mean, maybe they don't go camping anymore. Maybe they don't, you know, go out. And, you know, I mean, the stuff like Gruff, I don't understand. But, you know, it's just kind of, you know, it's just a different vibe now.
It is.
I guess it was simpler when we were kids.
I guess
they overcomplicate it now. The internet and all that other crap that wasn't there when we were kids. You know?
That's true. That's probably why there's so many people who don't go outside and play and don't have any reason for a lot of other things. But you can't tell me that there's still not, no, kids are still not using drugs or anything like that, because I know for a fact that's
exactly.
Only now,
especially in this state,
you know, only now it's socially acceptable to use some drugs. Now it's like, okay, it's okay for some drugs, just not all.
I don't know.
You know, it's funny
that's also really, you know, that comes and goes in cycles. I remember when I was in high school, it was cool to smoke pot or do cocaine. It was like cocaine was a status symbol back then. Do cocaine meant you had arrived, you had money, because cocaine was a rich man's drug. So, and so it was cool. But then in the 90s, when crack came out and it became an epidemic, and it, you know, thousands and thousands of people, just like in the 70s when they had it with opium and they had it with meth, it was like, it wasn't so cool. Then when they got it under control, it becomes cool again. It's just like, and like I said, I think that's what we're going through now. We're just going through a phase right now where drugs are cool. The cool kids do the drugs.
I guess I'm not cool still.
When it gets bad, it gets, no, neither am I. I've given up on
man.
I was the kid who played D&D in high school, so hey.
Yeah. You know, I might have to have, you know, one of these days, I'm going to have to, have you ever tried to play Magic the Gathering? I know that's after your generation, but have you tried that?
Oh, yeah. I had a bunch of friends that was in the Air Force that was into Magic. They used to loan me, like, a deck, because I didn't have my own deck. And I would be like, oh, okay, sure. And they used to get pissed because I used to always have, like, the deck I had was, you know, they were all like, oh, there's no balance. So I'm like, no, I just blow crap up. I had a red deck that just blew everything up. It was just like volcanoes, earthquakes, and, like, asteroids hitting everything. And they drove him crazy because they're like, he gets all those freaking lands. He's going to tap in the lands, and he's going to obliterate us when he starts sitting. Oh, look, here he goes. There goes the volcano. There's half our guys gone, you know.
Love it. You know, it's sad. I tried to, you know, my kids are into the anime stuff, and they like to play games too.
Yeah.
I was trying to introduce them to the, you know, the Magic the Gathering, because I know my son likes the Pokemon stuff, which to me, it's basically a kid's version of Pokemon. I mean, an adult version of Pokemon is Magic. But also, I used to have friends of mine who used to play D&D who used to say that Magic was the lazy man's Dungeons and Dragons. Because,
you
know, because you
don't have to have it's easier to play. It's much easier to play. And it's at least in my opinion, it's much easier to play and requires less imagination.
Yeah, that's what it is. You know, it's sad.
You had to have imagination. Dungeons and Dragons, you had to have imagination to play that game because you were basing everything off of what you're basing everything off of what a guy was, some person was telling you, and if they were good at their job, if you had a good dungeon master that knew what they were doing, they can make a compelling story. But if you had bad ones, and God knows I've had a few, you know, you have to use your imagination a lot.
Right, exactly. You know, I'm going to have to talk to Dave. I think next time they have, like, a Monster Mania, they should be, like, a Magic the Gathering type of thing. You know, now that things are getting a little bit more normal at those events. Actually, I don't know if we've talked since Monster Mania. Have we talked since Monster Mania? I lose track.
I think so. I think so.
Right?
I don't remember. I'll be honest, I'm not 100% sure. I know I haven't done your show since then. I did your show just before Monster Mania, and that was the last time I was on your show. But I don't think... I mean, we've talked online. I know that.
Oh, of
but
course.
I just don't know
I keep
track
of people.
Yeah.
Well, before we go too far ahead of ourselves, why don't we backtrack? So let me ask you. So from your perspective, how was your experience at Monster Mania? Because I know your family was there, and since we're celebrating Father's Day and all.
Yeah, it was good. It's not the best. Mm-hmm. Again, I think it comes down to it's just that the con has outgrown the hotel, and I have to admit the hotel was in terrible shape.
The rooms were rough.
The elevators were rough. The restaurant was rough. I know that they've gotten they're on a new chain and they're going through a massive redesign and remodel, which I'm like, thank God, because the old girl needed it. She was in really really rough shape when we were there. I think that was probably my only real major gripe, was that the hotel was in such bad shape.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'd have to agree with that.
The Crown Plaza is normally like the crown jewel for me.
Yeah.
My wife and I and Tony, we love coming to the Crown Plaza, but we're both like, you know, we had to call and beg them for towels, things like that. We told them we wanted the room cleaned, and they still didn't bother to do it. You know, things like that just kind of added up. It became a problem. You know, that was, like I said, it wasn't a problem. There was a mistake. Like they made a mistake in our charge. They accidentally double charged us, and they had to go back and fix. You know, there's a lot of issues. All the major issues I had was with the hotel.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you're not the only one.
The con, the only problem with the con is that it's outgrown the place.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably it's. And I've said that for years. People know me, know that I've said that for years. I said Monster Mania should move to like a convention hall with a hotel nearby. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're going to be doing that, the one in November.
I know. He's doing the outdoor stuff. He's doing that outdoor, like some kind of flea market in near Philly, which is a great first step. But I think he needs to, as much as I don't want the con to go to Philadelphia, I think he needs to find a convention place in Philadelphia so that he can move. Because it's just, like I said, it's too dang crowded all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
You know, he had that huge Dexter reunion, which was amazing. But it's like, I couldn't get near James Remar. I was like, no, there's no way in heck I'm going to be able to get some of these autographs. Because it's just too many people, and you can't move. It took me 2 hours just to get the two autographs I did get. It took 2.5, 3 hours to get those two people. You know, I got the two Ash versus Evil Dead, Dana DiLorenzo, and I'm always forgetting the guy who plays Pablo's name. But, you know, those are the only two autographs I got. Super nice, well worth the wait. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun meeting them. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm like, God, this is taking forever.
I understand
Other than that, like I said, it's just, you know, I honestly wish Dave would consider, you know, pulling. I mean, I know he's the thing. I think one of the things I love best about Dave is his loyalty. He doesn't want to pull out of Cherry Hill because he's loyal to the Crowne Plaza.
Yeah,
he's loyal to the Cherry Hill Hotel because it's no longer a Crowne Plaza, but Cherry Hill Hotel or whatever the heck they were calling it. But the thing is that I think it's just like you got to think about what's best for your show.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I think after this last one, I agree with you. I think he's going to have to look into maybe because, I mean, that hotel had a lot of issues, like, with not just people like the guests, not just like people visiting the show. I was actually, it was my first time working the show. I had issues all weekend long. Then there were actually celebrity guests who had issues with their own rooms. And now how horrible is that when celebrities have issues? You know, and celebrities were having issues too. And that's not going to be good either. Yeah. So I think it's only going to be a matter of time. Because Dave's a smart guy. I think,
First and foremost, he's a great businessman. He understands. Now, he has the second most successful con on the East Coast. I think the only one that people would consider bigger would be Chiller Theater. And,
yeah, the one that
keeps
eluding me for years. That one keeps on, calling my name. I haven't pulled the trigger to go yet. Someday.
It's different. They like I said, don't expect the Monster Mania vibe when you go there. You don't expect the friendly vibe you get at Monster Mania. They are much more matter of fact. They're about getting your money, and that's kind of like that's because we had one year. Kim had a surgery, and we were gonna go to the March Monster Mania, couldn't go, but we went to I think it was like in April or May. Chiller had a show, so we decided to go there. It was in Parsippany, New Jersey, and it was different. It was very, very, very different. And
how would you compare it to Rock and Shock? You've been to Rock and Shock, right?
Oh yeah, bunches of times.
How would you compare it to Rock and Shock?
That was our local.
Yeah, I know.
How would I compare Monster Mania to Rock and Shock?
Yeah,
Rock and Shock is much smaller. It's much smaller, but the thing is that Rock and Shock is very, like Monster Mania, it's extremely well run.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. They've been there. They know how to do it. I think it was very smart that they did it at the convention center attached to the DCU. It's at the DCU arena. I thought that was really smart that they went to the convention center, and that way it opened you up to, like, there's like four or five hotels you can go to in Worcester that are walking distance to the convention. And so I always said that, you know what, that is what really worked. I thought Rock and Shock had a great system, and they knew how to work it. They didn't have to be jerks to people. They didn't have to sit there and bark and go rah, rah at people, you know, do this, do that, or I'm going to, you know. They didn't have to do any of that. It's like I've always said, if you have to yell constantly at your attendees, the people who are paying your salary to be there and are buying your tickets, there's something you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think I would last.
Yeah, that's kind of what the problem was with Chiller. Chiller seemed to be very authoritative. They were quick to bark, and like, unless you were on the inside and you knew some of the people there. Like, when we went our first time, I became friendly with one of the guys. He was this guy who dressed up as his own cosplay character. He was Mark the Animal Mendoza, and he was also a very gifted artist. And I hung out with him after he took off the makeup and the costume, and I bought a bunch of artwork from him. He gave me sketches from it, and so I was like, yeah, that was cool. And yeah. he never gave me a hard time, but he's like, yeah, it's, he's just like, yeah, it's like, he said, this the show we were at was a decent show, but he said, you should see the October show, he was saying. That's when they pull out all the stops, and they get all the mega, like the things you've never seen. The first people to do, like Sons of Anarchy, the first people to bring Sons of Anarchy to a show was Chiller. You know, when the Willy Wonka kids were touring, because they had a new, like a new anniversary edition of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, they were at Chiller. Leslie Nielsen, just before he died, was at Chiller. You know, they get those guys. They get, you know, so like I said, the thing is that they got out of the box a long time ago when it came to thinking about what they were going to bring to their show, and it really worked. It really works. Because they get, like I said, they got a hardcore, for any show, you got to have a hardcore base that's going to come out to your show. But at the same time, you survive or die by the new people coming to your show. So even if it's just, oh, we're only going to go out there for, I went out there one time just because I went to meet Dolph Lundgren, or I came out here to meet Neve Campbell, which I think is the centerpiece of the August show, is going to be the Scream. They're doing everybody from Scream, which I think is like I said, the only other show that would get David Arquette would have been Chiller, and Dave is the only other person I know that could pull that off.
I think Dave got David Arquette before, didn't he? I can't remember.
I don't know.
I think he was supposed to be there, but I don't think he was able to show up.
And he's got Courtney Cox coming to that August show, so that's impressive. Because they don't come cheap, especially Courtney, because she's got friend money. So it's not like she's hurting, you know, to come out and do shows. I mean, you have to convince her you're putting on a hell of a show.
Yeah.
The only problem is I hope the Crown Plaza is up to it, because I can't see the Dexter cast have been thrilled when they were there in March.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that with all the issues that they had in the hotel, I mean, I just chalk it up as, you know what, I'm just going to, you know, give it a break for a little while as far as staying at this hotel.
Yeah.
That's what kind of, you know, that's sad, because I actually like the convenience of staying in Cherry Hill, the convention's there. You know, and this is actually my first year actually crossing over and being part of the working team now. Now I'm, you know, official with my cool Muscle-Mania staff shirt. No, I mean,
you seem to be quite thrilled about that.
What's that?
I said you were very. I could see you were quite thrilled about that on over the weekend. I was like, yeah, Sean's happy right now. He's working the show.
Well, you know what it was? I always feel loyal, like Dave and like a lot of us. I'm very loyal to people, you know. And Dave has always, you know, done his best to provide myself, my family, and a lot of other people with, you know, entertainment for years. I mean, giving us the opportunities to say hello and thanks, and thank some of our heroes that we normally wouldn't get a chance to. The fact that when it comes time for March, I know that just before March, I send him my, quote, birthday gift list. And somehow in March, you know, half of them will be there. And this past March is no different. There's a good portion of the people on that list. So, but then again, I've also come to find out that, you know, he also likes to trickle them out through the year, too. But now I'm crossed over because, you know, Dave's always been there for me. And when they needed help, I said, you know what? I'm working from home right now, working on the writing and doing the filmmaking thing right now and a couple other things. I just took a job working for the Boys and Girls Club down near me, so I'm helping them out with their sports and recreations and stuff. But in the meantime, you know, I have time that I can go away for a weekend to help Dave out, you know what I mean? And unfortunately, this is going to be my first time, you know, the rest of this year, going by myself to any of these things. And I'm going because I'm working the show, obviously. But I've never actually gone to any of those shows by myself. As odd as that sounds, you know, I've never actually.
No, that's not odd at all. I've never gone alone.
I've never gone to
a show by myself. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I feel awkward doing it, but on the same sense, you know, my wife's got work, the kids got work, kids are getting older. Yeah. Granted, you know, they can come if they choose to, and you know, maybe throughout the year they might choose to go to one in, you know, one of the ones later. But like my son's birthday, you know, we're talking about Father's Day and stuff. My son's birthday is this year. Well, actually, both kids' have birthdays this year. Kids are, you know, kids get older every year. There's no break from that. But my son's going to be turning 20 in November, right when I'm going to be in Maryland, wow. in that November show.
Oh, okay.
It'll be my first time missing his birthday, but he told me to bring him a shirt.
Huh.
He's a working guy, you know.
Okay.
He is. But he'll be there in March,
along
with my daughter and everything else. And my daughter's going to be 21 in July.
Wow.
My head's like, you
wow.
know. Yeah, I feel even
my little guy
times
just
older.
Turned 7, so I gotta wait for golf. I have to worry about that.
Yeah, I saw it. He just got up there. He just got turned big old 7, huh? That was cool. What did
yeah.
you guys do?
Yeah. We did a whole bunch of stuff. We had a whole weekend. We had two parties for him. We had one that was just for family at the house. And then there was this, like, trampoline park in Everett called Sky Zone. He had all
of
his school
place.
Chums and all of his friends there at that
oh,
one.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah. It was, oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Oh, boy.
I bet, huh?
Chaos doesn't begin to describe the trampoline park.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, oh, good Lord.
This is the fun part of dadhood. Yeah. Tell us about what it goes on at the 7th-year-old birthday party.
Well, you get about, dear Lord, we had about 25 to 27 kids, and some of the parents just dropped them off.
Yeah,
so we were responsible for keeping an eye on those kids, along with our own kid, which was extremely. It's that gets really interesting, you know, because you're chasing after. Now you have like, okay, there's my kid. Okay, where's that other kid? That oh, there he
What's
is.
What's his name
there
again?
He is.
Yeah.
Oh, the names are fine because well, I never forgot the names because I can call them out if I have a lost sight of them. Like. I'd be like, Rebecca, where are you? Oh, there you are. Okay,
oh,
sweetie, go ahead and have fun. Just want to make sure I know
oh,
who you are, you know, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember how that works all too well.
Yeah. It's just,
I never
like
understood
say, you know,
that.
And then just, you know, bring all the kids together into one space. Then everybody gets to eat. And that's the easiest part, when it's time to sit down and eat and have the cakes. We had cupcakes. We had a cake for the family party, and then we did cupcakes for the trampoline one, and the cupcakes were a hit. The kids loved the cupcakes. They were, each kid got his own individual cupcake, and they could do whatever the heck they wanted with it. It wasn't like, it wasn't like chocolate cake, you know, like chocolate cake, because we had half the chocolate, half vanilla. So, like, and it was all Sonic, and it all had to have a theme, of course, which was Sonic the Hedgehog.
Cool.
And that was prominent everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy!
It's crazy when you're going through it, when it's after and your kid is completely like obliterated with happy tired. It's just like every sweat ball, every muscle ache. It was worth it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You made his day. You made his day, and that's all that matters at the end of
it. And that's what it is. It's their day, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know.
Yeah, going back to the whole parents dropping kids off, I never understood that part of it, especially these days. Like, that would happen back in the day.
Something I would never do, not in today's society. You know, what happens if you're dropping your kid off and the parents who are watching them aren't very good at it, you know?
Yeah.
They weren't as alert as my wife and I were, and make sure we kept track of everybody. You know what the heck happens if you don't have that, and it's a public place. That's the part that would truly frighten me. It's a public place. Anybody could get in there and get and you know, God forbid, you get a predator or something in there. You know, like the year before, we did it at a public park because nothing was open because of COVID. So we did it at a public park, but all the parents were there, not because they were paranoid about, you know, something bad happened. They were paranoid about COVID and wanted to make sure their kids were wearing masks, everybody was masked up. It was, you know,
it's insane. I remember one time I was making a film in my early days, and I was doing part of, you know, filmmaking is, you know, you have the cast and crew would show up, and I was working on this independent film. It was an anti-bullying film, And, you know, of course, we have young people. This was a scene where – this is a time where we had a bunch of young people there. We had an actor coming in to play one of the cousins of the lead or whatever. And for the first – now, normally, you know, coming from the stage point of view, because from the filmmaker point of view, I've seen the whole, you know, stage parents thing. And there's many levels of that, too, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And I don't usually have a lot of time for that kind of stuff. In all honesty, some of the best people I know are the stage parents who don't usually get involved as often. But
yeah,
in the same sense, I also remember this one particular time we were filming at my brother's house. Because we're making an independent film. And, you know, when you're making an independent film, you got to use whatever. You have to use whatever you have. I mean, I have, you know, you have to have permits for certain things or whatever else, but for someone's house, you just need their permission. Now, I'm filming this thing, and this, you know, the actors have to be there, and sure enough, this kid's father, you know, this is kind of why, you know, I'm doing this show particular today. Mom's not saying anything about stage dads, because I have a friend, one of my favorite people is actually a dad who does a lot of work for his young son who does film and stuff. Jack Snyder Scott's dad. He's a wicked awesome guy.
Okay.
And he's a really cool guy, and he's coming on the show later on this weekend, actually, believe it or not. So doing the same thing you are. You're here before him. You're here for us.
I'm the trailblazer.
Yeah, the trail. That's right. But anyway, so I'm filming this movie, and the biggest difference between stage, like moms who are involved and versus dads, I find the dads, when it comes to the filmmaking thing, for the most part, they're as far back as possible as far as what's going on within the project or whatever else.
Yeah.
In my experience, usually it's the moms who take the leads and when it comes to, you know, finding out what's out there and getting – I mean, I work on both sides, and I'm very fortunate to work with really good – parents, you know, otherwise I usually don't work with the negative ones. I remember.
Yeah.
But we had this kid recasted. Now, one of the things I do when I do casting calls is if I have a role available and someone reads for it, my way of looking at it is if someone took time to want to be part of this project and they came up to audition for this role, and one of the perks of being the one who wrote the script and making the film is the fact that, you know, I can always write in a scene if I had to.
And
I did do that because I feel that if someone took the time to come and audition for my role, for a role in my film, even if I didn't necessarily think they were right for that particular role they auditioned for, I would at least offer them another role. Just because I appreciated them, and also if I can see the talent that's there, you know what I mean. And I do that. I'm probably one of the very few filmmakers who do that. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of people like to work with us. All honesty, because you know we got a reputation for that. You know what I mean? People knew that we put them to work. And when we had extra work, like people were right that we had the same extras almost 7 or 8 times during that whole film set. But anyway, this kid is going to be part of this scene with the kid playing the lead, and you know on set, you know it's me, the camera guy, you know me, I'm directing, and I also wrote it, so I'm doing that part of it. As the camera guy is there, and I gave the camera guy a little bit more leeway than a lot of other people. He did a lot of the technical stuff. Although I can do that, I would much rather have someone who's going to film school learn from that perspective, give him that opportunity. Even though he tried stealing that from me, that's beside the point. That's okay. But, anywho, I was running the set, and, you know, everyone was there, and one of the things, you know, the person who was, you know, the lead was already there, shocking. He was on time, which is good, considering, you know, he had to come all the way from Deerfield, New Hampshire, to film in South Shore, Massachusetts. Yeah, do the math on that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, we casted him because he, you know, the other guy I brought in to help, he didn't quite understand why we get people who live a town over to be in our film rather than book the guy who's, you know, Deerfield, New Hampshire. But anywho.
Yeah.
We're filming this. It was a Saturday when we're filming at my brother's house again. And here's the stage. Here's the dad. And he goes, okay, what you go. He's going to be here. I dropped him off. He's got a script. What time are you going to be? What time is he going to be done? 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock? Okay, just call him when he's done. He left the stage. The dad.
Uh-huh.
That was like one of the first few. That was the very few, like the first time that we had that on set. That a parent just dropped their kid off at set. You know, my brother's not in the filmmaking world. He doesn't understand how filmmaking goes. The kid who I was training in filmmaking, he's just learning and biting his teeth. And here I'm thinking, from the parent's perspective, myself, I don't know if I'd be so quick to drop my son off just to some random house to do film work. I don't know the people there. I don't know who the filmmakers are. And I'm not saying, you know, granted, we're trustworthy people and nothing's going to happen, granted. As a parent's perspective,
you don't know that. They don't know you. I was watching a movie. It was a Nick Cage movie recently, and this guy was a serial killer, and it was a true story, and he was up in Alaska, and how he got his victims was he tricked these women to come to what they thought were photo shoots for modeling jobs. And it's like he would trick them, he would tie them up and abuse them in this place, and then he'd take them all the way out to the woods and then shoot them and then leave them for the animals to feed off of. And this guy did it for like, Jesus, over 10 years he was doing it when he finally got caught. They said that some of his victims went back to the 1970s and they caught him in 83. I think that's the same thing. As a parent, you don't know if you could be that guy.
Yeah, or even if I'm not, what about, you know, you're dropping them off at this house. Who's the homeowner? You know what I mean? I'm like,
exactly.
I was just trying to explain.
You could be Jeffrey Dahmer, for all you know.
Yeah, he could have been Jeffrey Dahmer. If he wasn't, you know what I mean? So, I mean, from that point on, I made whenever we did a casting call, whenever we needed extra work, or whatever the case may be, I made sure that it was always said that if you're a young person, someone has to be on set. It's not because
Has to be there.
Yeah, it's not because I know, granted I'm, I have two kids myself and everything else, but from my perspective, I would feel better having the parent there. Who knows what would happen if something else used to happen? You don't know.
What do you do?
Yeah, what happens if something else happens? What if he gets hurt on set? You know what I mean?
I never understood parents who do that. I've never gotten that. The last thing I would do is leave my son. I let my son go outside in his backyard and play unattended.
Yeah.
I'm sure
so like
not
you're
not going to go drive him to a movie set and for people I don't know. For an independent film, which means they have no idea what your background is. So I'm sure as hell not going to sit back and just be like, oh, yeah, sure, I'm sure he's legit. Yeah, okay.
I'm just going to drop him off and let them take care of him. I'm like, what the heck?
People thought Wayne Gacy was just a clown, was a professional clown,
Now, this is coming from two people who watch a lot of horror movies, people.
Of course,
we've
seen the worst of things that could happen. So, so
real-life things are worse than those.
We're kind of like,
But, that's just the things you got to think about when you're a parent and things like that. And you run into these things, you're like, you scratch your head at the parents today. Those are the people who are like, why? Yeah. Why would you do that? I mean, granted, but that doesn't mean anything. I'm what they consider overprotective. My kids will probably tell you that I'm one of the most overprotective people out there. My son's going to be 20. My daughter's going to be 21. You know what? I still know where they are, what they're doing at their age now. And I'm as protective now as I was when they were 12 and, whatever else,
Well, I hate to say it, you're never going to stop being a parent until you're in the grave. Even then, it doesn't stop there.
My
mom still
mothers
me. I'm 52 years old. My mom still mothers me.
Yeah, see? Yeah, exactly. So, Mine too, actually.
Same thing. Exactly. So it's like you never stop being a dad. You never stop being a mom. I don't care how old your kids get, how old you are. That never stops. You just
have right.
to,
the other thing
you
is
just don't,
that
have, you just don't have the same
my...
level of, you know, you don't have the same level. You have to give more. You have to give more freedom as they get older. But you always
Some.
Set that term. It's like, but you never stop being a parent.
Right. Yeah, it's true. And they never stop needing you. That's something else that I have
no.
to keep reminding my wife, for example. You know, because
yeah.
I know for the fact, you know, there's going to be those times, and that's okay. We make sure our kids know that if they need something, they know they can always come to us. And that's
yeah,
important
exactly.
to have, that relationship, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
To be able to talk yeah. to your okay. kids is something that's important, you know? Now, you have a seven-year-old,
yeah,
so how many, now, what does a conversation go with a seven-year-old as far as things, like, because you had to deal with a lot of, like, life things and things, a lot of things in news and media and things like that. How do
yeah.
you guys deal with that with someone his age?
Well, you know, we tell him that not all people are the same. He's like, you know, I'm like, you know, it's like dealing with bullies or dealing, it's like, you know, bullies is like, you know, using the bully analogy is a terrific thing. It's kind of mm-hmm. like, why did that country invade? That's like, well, Russia invaded the Ukraine because Russia was being a bully.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
right.
Okay. And so that kind of like, it's an oversimplified
yeah.
thing. I freely admit that, but it does fit. It does fit. It does
yeah, but
fit
it makes does, sense to him.
What I'm
know?
Trying to explain to him. It's just like, yeah, they're doing something bad because they're being a bully.
Right.
Oh, so he gets that, and it kind of
right.
that clicks easily for him. So it's like, okay, great, that worked. Now,
now at his age, does he get a lot of bullying, or has he have the experience any of that yet? Do you know?
Not really. I mean,
I'm knocking on wood, by the way. You can't hear it, but I am.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, one of the things I was always concerned about when we were going to the shows was, I'm like, well, how are people going to be? Are they going to try to scare them? But nobody does that. It's like he's not afraid of a person walking up to him in a freaking, you know, a demonic, you know,
yeah,
mask, demonic costume, or it's like, or a Jason Voorhees. One of the cutest pictures anyone ever said. They said, you got my son, he's probably about four, asking this guy dressed up as Jason all these questions about, is the machete pointy? Is the costume hot? If people picked on, would his mommy come to protect him? You know, it's just like the things that go through a 4-year-old mind. He's just asking this guy dressed up as one of the most notorious serial killers in the history of Hollywood. You know, but
you know,
the thing is, it's
is
like he goes right up to the guy. There was a guy dressed in a Creature of the Black Lagoon costume. He just goes right up to him because he thought that he looks like a fish. And it's just like,
yeah.
he just says, he starts pulling on my hand and says, Daddy, Daddy, fish. And
right.
off we go talk to this guy. And the thing is that the cosplayers don't try to scare him. They think they love it. They think
yeah.
it's so awesome. And this one guy sat there and said to me, he's like, no, he's like, he's like, you don't understand. He's like, he's the next generation. He's going to be a new generation.
Right.
If
that's
we give
exactly
him
right.
a great example,
right.
and nothing but he will be a cosplayer someday because we want to make sure cosplaying goes on.
Right.
So,
and conventions and horror fans and everything else. That's
yeah.
what it is. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody
hey, kudos
ever gone
to you guys
out there
bringing that
in. Oh, yeah. They could sit there targeting them left and right. There's like this whole crew of like at Monster Mania a couple of years ago, the whole crew of them were like these kind of like this demonic clown crew, and
oh, yeah.
guys and gals. And you'll see the pictures of them. He's taking
yeah.
pictures with all of them, and they've been running around chasing people and screaming at them. And the guys on stilts chasing people on the stilts, and then
yep.
they're doing their thing. It's you know being creepy and scary. They see him. It's like they're from Ringling Brothers. They're like the clowns
yeah.
from Ringling Brothers. They're just trying to be
right.
so friendly and nice to him.
It's
they don't
like
wanna,
the Bill.
It's like, no,
like Bill Skarsgård on set of It.
Yeah, it's like you know they don't want him to be. They're like no, we don't want to. There's no fun in. It's like we understand. It's like if we're scaring an adult, the adult understands. We're just playing with them.
Right.
I don't want to scar a kid because the kid's not going to see that. If I'm getting
right.
scary to a kid, that
yeah.
kid's never going to see a clown again and not hate clowns. And I don't want that.
Right.
I want them to love clowns.
Right.
I want them to dress up just like me one day.
Right.
You know?
There you go.
Yeah, that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
Now, let
right
me ask
idea.
You this. Let me ask you this now, because you're a horror fan, I'm a horror fan, and my wife and I, admittedly, yeah. we probably show our kids movies, probably a lot of, I don't know where, you can't see my air quotes, but quote, unquote, normal parents probably wouldn't show. Well, let's put it this way. Conventional parents wouldn't show their kids, probably.
Yeah.
But I grew up watching horror movies with my mother, who in my family, she was both mother and father because I was, she raised me by herself. So she was both for me. But I remember watching those things, you know, with her and stuff like that. So, of course, I do the same with our kids. And admittedly, my daughter is more into the horror stuff than my son. But even my son, there are some things that he enjoys, and I know the limits, you know what I mean? As you tend to know with your kids, you know, the differences and stuff. But let me ask you this. So now when it comes to watching things with your son who's seven, and I know you're a horror fan and a sci-fi guy, now, has he seen a lot of horror stuff, and what have you shown him if he has?
No, he hasn't. I don't. He's seven. I think that that's a little bit too young. I mean, I didn't watch horror when I was his age. I show things like we watch Godzilla together.
I want to be clear. That is what I'm trying to talk about too. That's kind of I consider
an
intro to horror.
So Godzilla was big. Godzilla was a big thing for him. He's seen a lot of the classics. He's seen a lot of the He's seen the black. He's seen the original Godzilla. The 1950s Godzilla with Raymond Burr. I didn't play in the one that's Gojira, the original Japanese version, because he can't read, so he can't read the subtitles.
There's
no point in him playing a movie that's in another language and saying,
Tommy,
why aren't you getting this? He's like, I don't understand what they're saying, Daddy. You know? He's seen the most recent Godzilla. He's seen the most recent Godzilla versus Kong, and he loved it. Godzilla was, like, you come to my house, you'll see there's Godzilla stuff everywhere. There's Godzilla figures.
My wife and him, we get along really well.
He loved those.
My wife
loved
Godzilla.
But when the horror, like I've shown, we sat down, we watched like Monster Squad because he thought that was cool because they were kids. It was
that's kind of what I'm talking about,
And of course, the thing is, I'm always explaining to him, that's like, look, Buzz, you remember. That was one of the things we did because we went to a show and Duncan Regeer was there and Duncan Regeer played Dracula in Monster Squad. And I sat there and said, Tommy, I want you to see. And I said hi to him. I said, do you mind if I introduce my son to you? Because he's seen Monster Squad and I just want to show him that you're a real person, not Dracula, not just Dracula. He's like, oh, absolutely. So I got grabbed and I said, Tommy, go see. You see this guy? I said, was the guy who played Dracula in Monster Squad. And he's like, and he did the Dracula voice because he had a beard. So Tom, he didn't necessarily recognize, but when he did the Dracula voice, then he went back to his normal voice. My son was absolutely stunned. He was like, oh, wow, you're right, Daddy. He just was like, he's an actor. That's what he does. He does make-believe in front of the camera. But I would not show him anything harsh. Like, he's not going to see Nightmare on Elm Street or Friday the 13th or Halloween or stuff like that for a very long time. I'm sorry.
Our kids,
I know people that take their kids and they're his age that have taken them to see Scream. And it's like, I'm the bigger horror fan. I'm the biggest horror fan in the family. And I never had an argument about this. I'm like, no, Tommy's not going to watch Scream. No, Tommy's not going to watch Nightmare on Elm Street or Halloween or any of those films. If I watch one of those films,
it's too young. Right. I'm with you on that.
So I kind of draw the line. I will start to let him watch some of those films when he's the same age as I was when I was watching them. I kind of remember the first time I saw Halloween. I was in my teens. Same thing for Friday the 13th. And those movies didn't scare me so much because I was like, ooh, that's just cool. The funny thing was is that the movie that scared the hell out of me, I was probably 13 or 14 at the time, was The Thing. It was when John Carpenter redid The Thing.
Sure.
And it's just because of the shock of who the aliens were And the special effects, I never seen those kind of special effects before.
Yeah.
So those two things, that's why it's my favorite horror movie. I said, you know, hey, favorite comedy should be the movie that makes you laugh the most. Favorite drama is the one that moves your heart the most. Favorite horror film is one that scares the crap out of you the most.
You know, that's
exactly. That was the thing.
Absolutely. You know,
yeah.
Yeah, well, like I said, 100%.
I just sit there and say to people, it's like, you know, he'll watch them, and he'll only watch them when he wants to. I'm not going to sit there, okay,
yeah.
Thomas, sit down next to me. We are watching Halloween. No. If he wants to watch Halloween, he can watch Halloween. But he's going to probably be in his teens when he does that.
Right, exactly. Because that's part of the thing, too, being a parent. You have to put those limits on that, you know what I mean? Because otherwise,
absolutely.
A lot of people don't.
Yeah. Because I think some people get confused. They're trying to be friends with them, or they're trying to say, they think that, oh, I was watching these movies when I was a kid. Yeah, but you know what? Did you really benefit from it? Was it really a good thing for you?
Right.
You know,
and that's
you know,
100%. Exactly. That's kind of what the point
that's
was.
The part that's like, now, it's kind of like, my thing is that, you know, I did watch movies when I was younger. I did see Hammer horror film when I was a little, not much older than my son is now. But you know what? They scared the crap out of me. And I'm like,
right.
I don't want my son to go through that. It wasn't pleasant. So why would I want to inflict that on him? You know, Christopher Lee jumping out with the blood stain on his mouth and snarling with the fangs. Yeah, that scared the hell out of me when I was a kid.
Sure, sure.
You know, and it was.
You know, that's part of it,
like
too.
That before.
Sure. And that's, I think that's kind of what makes us sometimes better parents, too, nowadays, where we remember the things that when we went through, what we learned, and we can adapt those things. I think a lot of the times some people feel like they have to live the same way as their parents do. And how our parents looked at things, I mean, I don't know about your parents, but our family, a lot different on as far as, you know, having any kind of dealing with bullies or anything like that, because...
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, I mean, how often did you hear sticks and stones will break your bones, but names will never hurt you?
Oh, yeah.
That's how we dealt with bullies back in the day, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the parents would say, hey, where's your teacher? Or your parents would say, well, where was your teacher when this is happening? Or tell the teacher is what the advice we got when we were growing up, right? I mean, I don't know. You were actually a different era than I was.
Yeah, no. So that's what we did. We dealt with bullies. We dealt with them that way. You know.
Right.
You know.
Now,
but like
now
said,
looking back,
my parents, I came into with the advent of cable television. I was pre-cable, and then cable television came along, and that's how I snuck in some of those films. I saw films my parents didn't know I was seeing them, because they were on channels that my mom and dad didn't realize that's what they showed on those channels. You know, it was like the new thing. It's kind of like the internet used to be when the internet first broke. It was like, oh my goodness, you know, look at all this stuff on it, you know?
Yeah, right.
And all these people trying to, you know, pick up the kids and stuff on the chat rooms and stuff. I remember all that crap.
Oh,
you know,
they still do. And that drives me nuts.
Because they never dealt with chat rooms when they were kids. They had no reference point. They didn't know that they existed. They didn't know it's a new thing. So that's what these people were taking advantage of. People just didn't understand what the heck they were looking at or what was going on. So that's,
you know,
what's
sad,
you know,
is that was back when internet started. You know, I swear, the social media is both a blessing and a curse. I've been lucky enough to network through social media, but I see some horrific things out there online in social media. I'm not on Facebook anymore. I don't have time for the Facebook thing. There's just too much of the whole, you know, everyone sharing their own 2 cents, whatever. Instagram I'm on. If I have a picture of something I'm going to be doing and stuff like that, that makes sense. But in all honesty, I usually use that as a way to find talent when I'm working on a film or whatever like that. That's why Instagram's there for me. But I see some scary things on there, and I often end up getting myself. I usually have to take the role because I'm a parent too. and say, hey, you might want to let your parents know that someone is saying this to you. Because, you know, sometimes you'll see things like the Q&As or whatever. And I see some horrific things people are saying. And the dad mode kicks in. I'm like, hey, creepy. And that's not my role to watch someone else's son or daughter or whatever else. But when you're a dad, that's just kind of in your blood. You just kind of have it.
It kind of covers, it covers a lot of ground.
It does. And you become as protective for everyone else as well as your own, you know. But it gets scary sometimes, the lack of parental viewing, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, it's creepy. I don't like it.
The thing I don't like about the social media is all the hate that gets spewed on there and the narrow-mindedness. It's like, you know, remember if you and I may come from different political beliefs, you know, different religious beliefs, we could talk about it. But now it's like, if you don't think my way, don't talk to me. I want you to die, you know?
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Like
it really
that,
is terrible. It's like we've forgotten that, you know what, you believe what you believe, I believe what I believe, you know? And it's like I have an opinion, you have an opinion, and we can talk about it and mutually try to still show each other respect, saying understanding. It's like, I respect that you feel this way, but that doesn't exist anymore. It's like, I'm going to put your address up there. I'm going to tell people to go to your house because you said this. So, you know, it's like, you know.
Exactly.
Things I don't talk about a lot. I don't talk about, like I said, it's like a lot of things I don't talk about being a veteran about, because I know there's lots of people online that hate veterans, that think we're all baby killers. And that's a major concern, because I don't want people coming after me and then saying, oh, well, look, he's got a kid. He's vulnerable.
Yeah. Right.
You know, at the end of the day.
I was watching, I laid witness to this person. He's a younger person. He's a young actor growing up, you know, making his way in Hollywood and whatever. He's taking some time off because he's already burnt out, the poor kid. He was doing a Q&A the other day, and someone from another country was attacking him for, you know, all of America, Americans being this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, the kid's always he's always doing things for charities. He's always trying to help other people. And these people are quite, you know, absolutely hating this kid just because he's from America.
Yeah.
I'm American. I care about other people, too.
They're hating him. They're hating the concept of him. It's like they don't know him. But they know, but they sit there and they see a white kid, they see a black kid, they see a gay kid, they see a straight kid, and they hate based on that concept, not getting to know the person, you know.
Right, which is horrible.
One of the best lines I ever heard in the movie was this guy sat there and said, the movie was shot, it was supposed to be during the Civil War. And they asked him, says, "Well, what do you feel about Negroes or black people?" And he sat there and said, "What, you mean the race?" It's like, I can't rightly say. And he says, "Nothing to be ashamed of, because you can't judge a race. People who judge by the group are peewits. You take men one at a time."
Mm-hmm.
Alan's like, you know, we'd be a much better place if we did that and stopped judging by the group and start judging, just taking the time to learn who somebody is and be like, oh, okay.
You know. Tim's converting to F4Lism, ladies and gentlemen. He's speaking F4L. You know, this is the they know that's one of the models of the F4L. You know, Tim.
Oh, okay.
Did you know that?
It's
one of the things.
I didn't. But the thing is, it's a concept. It's something I've lived by my whole life. I don't judge somebody. I don't want to know what your politics are. I don't want to know. I don't care if you're straight or if you're homosexual. I don't care what your skin color is. I'm
sure.
I know the person, and then I'll make an assessment of you as I know you as a person. A jackass can be male, female, white, black, Hispanic, Asian. It can be homosexual. It can be a straight person. You know, it can be Republican or Democrat. You name it. A jackass comes in all categories. Every category of person can have a jackass in it, you know, and they do.
100%. You're right, 100%.
You know?
See, the creed of the F4L is we, every day we live, it's love, care, and compassion, understanding, respect for each other's differences. That is what it is to be F4L. And that's how I've always lived. I treat others, the old golden rule that has since gone out the window. You know, and that's how I live, and that's how a lot of people who quote F4L live. We left how we look at things. We try to respect each other's difference. You know how little problems it would be if people just kind of let people be them and don't have opinions on other people likes and dislikes.
People who say that and say these terrible things, it's like, you know what? I use this as an example. I said, you know who the closest group of people ever came to killing Adolf Hitler during the Second World War? It's a group of Nazis.
Yeah,
members
right.
of his own party who did not believe in the racial purity and the extermination of other peoples took a stand against him
and
almost killed him. They almost killed him. They came that close to killing him. And they all died for those, but they all died for it horribly, I might add. But the thing was is that I would say about 80% of the men that were involved in the Great Bunker Plot, as it was known as, or Operation Valkyrie, they were all members of the Nazi Party. They joined because that's how you got ahead in life in Germany at that time. You couldn't advance without being a member of the party, but didn't mean that they believed in it. They didn't believe in the madness.
Right.
But, of course, if you sit there and say that, you set people off because, like, oh, they're all bad. It's like, no, unfortunately, you can't have that.
You can't rope everyone together, right.
History doesn't pan out that way because, you know, the good old Western allies, they never got close to them, and neither did the Russians, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it was his own people that almost got him several times. Every assassination plot against Adolf Hitler was done by another German.
Right. And that goes back to the whole thing. Not everybody, like you said, you can't judge it. Not everyone's the same. You know, I know people who are Russians who don't believe in their own political thing. Just like there's Americans who don't believe in all the political things here.
You hear about that all the time. Tons of Russians kicking me out again. But the thing is, they're not allowed to, but they still do it, even though it's a danger to their lives. But, of course, we have to put this sign up, Russia bad, China bad.
Right.
Well, guess what? Not all Chinese people are bad. Not all Chinese people, you know, pull along with their leadership.
Right.
You know,
and the same thing goes for Russians and anywhere else in any other culture.
Yeah.
There's not all the people are all the same. You know, like I have people I have on my YouTube show who are Russian because they're very nice people. They're very respectful people. They love the Americans. They love everyone in general. They're just sports athletes. And you know how many people hate me for featuring them on our show? So, of course, I keep a lot
of
featuring on my show.
Those people are probably the problem. They're close-minded.
Yeah.
They don't want to think. They want to sit
there. So that's when I book those people
think.
Even more. That's what I do. That's how I take my stand.
They judge by the group. You're white.
Yeah,
you must be
terrible.
You're white. You must be racist.
Right, that's like being American and not everyone likes everyone in America. We're not all the same Americans.
Yeah. No, we all speak the same language, you know?
Yeah.
We all have different dreams.
Now, not changing the subject too quick, but, so, you know, when we grew up, you know, we'd watch certain things, you know, try to get on more of a celebratory thing, talking about as far as, you know, pop culture stuff and things like that. What are the kids listening to these days, Tommy's age, as far as music goes?
Music,
this is the beat that goes on, believe it or not, as far as what music goes
He kind of listens to my music and my wife's music.
And what
he likes
that?
Judas Priest, and he likes Judas Priest from Dad, but he also likes Pink from Mom.
Oh man, you guys are
on. Bon Jovi. He likes Dad's Iron Maiden. So, like I said, you know, he's not at the age I think that he has his own kind of like access to music. He has things that he likes that he exclusive to him. There's a couple of YouTube personalities that he's really into. Somebody named Unspeakable, and he's a You know, he likes Unspeakable because Unspeakable plays his favorite video game, which is Minecraft. So right now, Minecraft.
My son loves Minecraft.
Huh?
My son loves Minecraft, even at his age.
Oh, yeah. I remember when Minecraft first came out, it was all adults playing it. Now it's all kids. I think it's hilarious. I don't know anything. He's tried to show me a few things about it, and I still don't get it. You know, it's like, oh, okay, so if you do this, it doesn't. No, Dad, that's not how it works. I'm like, okay, I give up. I'm going to go over here and play my Evil Dead video game because I have no idea what the hell you're doing over here.
You know, that's part of the fun of also being a parent is the difference between, like, what we know and what they know are different, and then the culture shock. Like, they know things.
Oh, yeah.
They're more aware of things we don't even know about, but yeah, we know things that they know. You know how that works.
Oh, yeah. It's like we know history. They know the present.
Yeah. Right.
That's how I look at it. We both try to figure out the future together. I was like, that's the best way I can put it. Like, I know the history. He knows the present better than I do. He understands what's happening, you know, with all the culture, pop culture stuff and all this thing happening there, that thing happening there, over here, and there, and everywhere. You know, he's got that stuff down pat.
Now, you know what I find funny is when we were growing up, to be a celebrity, they had to be in a film, on television, in music, even a politician, theoretically. But
yep.
You'd be amazed how many more people my kids know, and I am like, who?
Yeah. The guy I just mentioned, Unspeakable, that my son adores, he's a YouTube personality. And he's made over $1 million doing it and doing what he does.
Yeah.
He does wacky stuff with video games, and he has a giant Lego house and things like this. My son loves it because he's an adult playing with all the things that my son likes to play with.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, but he's just a YouTube personality. He hasn't really, it's not like he's been in movies. It's not like he's written music or been in a successful band.
Sure.
You know, he's not been in some kind of television show. Like you and I, like, you know, we look at that and it's just like, you know, you get a kick out occasionally when I sit there and I bring up, you know, like somebody like Tom Hanks. Like, oh yeah, I remember when Tom Hanks was a cross-dresser in a television show that was played every Thursday night on ABC.
Oh,
Bosom Buddies. People look at me like, oh, what? I'm like, look it up. That's what he made his big break before he started doing movies. He did that television show. He and another actor played these two guys that they couldn't find any else place to live, so they found an apartment place that rented only to women, so they dressed up as women. They called them Bosom Buddies. People looked at me like, what?
How often do you watch something or hear something? Yeah.
No, go ahead.
I was wondering if you have the same problem I have where someone will bring up someone current in pop culture, like who? Do you ever have that issue?
Okay,
good. I'm not the only one then.
My wife and son were talking about somebody named JoJo Siwa. I'm like, what the hell is a JoJo Siwa?
What the hell is JoJo Siwa?
I'm like, oh, lovely. I'm like, what is she saying? My son's like, I don't know. I haven't heard any of her songs. I've just seen her on Nickelodeon. I was like, oh, okay. I'm thinking to myself, JoJo Siwa. Okay, got it. File that away for when I go to work tomorrow. I'm going to Google her name just so I know what the heck my son's talking about. So I don't know if I can see an idiot.
I'm not the only one. See?
Yeah.
My wife likes to give me a hard time because sometimes I have a nap or watching something or hearing about something. I'm like, almost the fifth name I hear is like, who? Oddly enough, I do know who JoJo Siwa is, oddly enough. And that's just because I have the YouTube show, Bailey.
Yeah.
I know, let's put this way, I know of her. I don't know her.
Yeah, I know, exactly. I figured it out. I was like, I looked it up. I was like, oh, okay, so she's a singer. She does pop music.
She did that Dancing with the Stars thing, apparently.
Yeah, she was big on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, my wife watched that Dancing with the Stars, and that's where she watched.
She was on one of the shows at Nickelodeon, and then she kind of graduated to doing her own pop music. So it's like, oh, okay.
Good one of those deals. So you know more than I do.
Yeah. I had to look it up because my son was into it, and I may get this wrong, but I think I understand it correctly. He just thought the name sounded funny, and that's what caught his eye. Caught his eye was the name. It's like that just sounded funny to him. So he's like, oh, okay, I want to check this out. I was like, okay, I'm glad to hear it, Tom.
You know what's funny is I went for a long time never hearing the name JoJo. I haven't heard the name JoJo in years. Yet YouTube show and from social media, whatever, I know three JoJos now.
It's like I hear JoJo and used to be that was a guy. I knew one guy. I knew a couple of people.
Yes.
I knew a couple of JoJos, and I was like, they were guys. So I was like, my son first sat there and said JoJo Siwa. I was like, who's that? Oh, who is he? It's like it's a girl, Dad. I'm like, what? Oh, okay. Thinking myself, okay.
And it gives you the look, right?
I'm like, okay. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm good to know. I'm like, it's one of those neutral names then. Okay, got it. You can be male or female with that, you know?
Yeah, the other two JoJos are male that I know. That's the only – then I heard about JoJo Siwa. I'm like, who? And then Alex, actually, I have a co-host who does the YouTube show with me, the wrestling show. And his name is JoJo also, and he is the one who actually told me more about JoJo Siwa, who I didn't know from a whole lot. That's a female. And then my wife had to sit there and tell me who the heck she was, because my wife seems to know more about the pop culture stuff than I do, too. But my kids are usually the ones.
My wife generally is also more up on that stuff than I am, because – like I said, I'm the one who listens to the classic rock station. She listens to the pop station on the radio.
That's kind of me. That's kind of me, too. If I listen to the radio, usually it's the iPod or Spotify, and it's on, like, the rock channel where I make my own Spotify or whatever. I agree. Our kids are lucky because they have so is yours. Yours is lucky, too. We raise our kids to have the great music sense because you'd be surprised how many kids today are actually more into, like, the 80s and the 90s stuff than, like, the music today. Because my kids, for example, love Def Leppard. They love Bon Jovi. They love Aerosmith. My daughter loves Metallica. My son likes all kinds of – you know, I got to tell you, this is a fun little thing you might enjoy. I'm not really into the whole anime thing, unfortunately, because I don't have time for that. Even though I probably should, but I don't. My kids love it, but my son found a show.
Some of it,
You watch it?
What?
Oh, I was saying that my son found a show called JoJo's Adventures. Have you heard of that show?
No, I haven't. Like I said, I've dabbled in anime. There's a couple of, like, Cowboy Bebop and stuff like that, but that's about, you know.
For me, it was heavy metal. That was about Speed Racer.
It's Speed Racer. Oh, the older stuff, absolutely. Star Blazers.
Yeah, that stuff
Speed
I know.
Racer,
I know
all
about that stuff.
Yeah. So I'm like,
my kids don't,
but
I do.
I think the last one I got into was I remember watching a show called Cowboy Bebop, and that was like a few years. That was like about 10, 15 years ago, and a friend of mine recommended it to me because he's like, you got to check this out. You'll love it. And it's like, it's Japanese culture, cowboys.
Did you like it?
Cowboys. It was actually very good. I liked it. It had several, like two or three seasons. It was very good stuff. And like I said, I'm always impressed with the anime animation. It's always good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Captain.
You look like me. You like a chance. That's good. Yeah, my son found a show called JoJo's Adventures, and the way I found this out is because he'll ask me about a band from like our era. And he'll ask me, hey, what is this? What is Pink Floyd saying? Or what is, like, Alice in Chains or Metallica or AC/DC thing or whatever? I'm like, well, how do you know what that is? It's usually the ongoing joke. Like, he'll bring up one of those bands. I'm like, how do you know who that is? And then it'll, you know, usually it's basically this anime. I guess the idea of this anime is they have what they call stands. I guess it's a good group of people. And basically they're named after our era music, oddly enough. I don't know how they get around that. I don't know why. I've to be honest with you, and to be fair, I've never actually watched the show. But because he's really into it, he and his, my daughter are really into it, he's really going to really opened up his music, you know, palette, I guess you'd say. He always had a pretty good music palette anyway, but now he's really open to, like, Metallica and Motley Crue and all these songs that apparently are named after, like, this show has got these called stands named after these bands. In fact, fun stuff, I don't think I can name more than one Fleetwood Mac song. My son was telling me about a Fleetwood Mac song I forgot all about, and that's because of that show.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that's our job as the dads to show them the music, though, after they ask us, though. I can tell you about what the song is, but it's much easier for me to just play you a song.
Yeah.
What do you think? Well, that's pretty much how it works, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I said. My son doesn't really come to me for, you know, he'll tell me, he'll sit there, like, if something comes on the radio or something like that, and he's like, I like that song, Daddy. Who does that? And I'll be like, okay, that's the name of the band, and that's the name of the song. He's like, I like it. I'm like, okay. You know, he likes music.
Does he have a favorite yet?
You know, he likes listening to music. I don't think he has a favorite anything yet when it comes to that. It's very new. It's still, like, for a while I got a kick out because for a while, as a joke, my wife played Judas Priest for him. And he loved Judas Priest. And
he likes Judas Priest,
time,
huh?
Yeah, he loved Judas. Every time he got in the car, he said, Daddy, put on Judas Priest. I'm like, okay. So I'd pull out the CD and put Judas Priest on the CD. And we'd start playing it. It's like, okay. And now he's a lot more, he's kind of diversified his music, which makes me kind of happy. Because I want him to be able to experience different types of music so he can come up with his own, you know, his own stuff. Usually when he starts, it's not where he's going to end. I mean, like I said, when I was a kid his age, I was into ABBA. So.
Sure. No. Right? Yeah. Music definitely grows.
In the 70s, I was into ABBA. I didn't start getting into hard rock and metal and stuff like that until, you know, the late 80s, early 70s, you know, when I started discovering bands like The Who and such. So.
By the way, that's another one of those groups that's named after that. That show has a group named after The Who and all kinds of things of that name. Yeah, I'm like, how do you know? Like, I stopped asking now when he asked me about now he's older now, but he'll still ask me about a band, and I'll say, well, here, you know, but I'll tell you. Now, does your son sing along in the radio, or is he just listening to the music at this point?
Yeah, he does sing along. If it's one of his favorite songs, he absolutely, like, he loves Bon Jovi.
That's not one of your favorite things ever.
Oh, it's adorable listening to him sing. Like, you know, I'm like, you know, we'll be driving, and all of a sudden, like, Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer comes on, and he starts singing the song.
Oh,
he knows
son.
The words and everything. You know, it's because Mommy has played it for him a bunch of times because Mommy likes Bon Jovi. So he likes that, you know. And it's easier for him because I've said this before. It's like, you know, yes, Mommy's music is easier to sing to than Daddy's music. Daddy's music is a little bit harder to understand the words because Daddy's music is a lot harder. It's harder to understand what James Hetfield from Metallica is singing versus John Bon Jovi. So it's a big difference between the two.
Sure there is.
You know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, do you guys draw the line in the sand when it comes to, like, limits for music, too, or no?
Well, we stay away from the music where they're using bad language. That's why he doesn't listen to hip-hop and stuff like that. Or music that's just denigrating towards people. You know, it's like, you know, again, that's why we keep them away from hip-hop. Because a lot of it is just very negative. So we try to keep them away from the negative stuff. So, like I said, if there's a lot of cursing in the music, I don't play it for him. If there's a lot of, I'm not into that either. I'm not into guys who are dropping F-bombs in their albums every 5 seconds and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's not really my, that's not something the music I'm into anyways. It's just like, so what?
Right.
So you're cussing, you know, you know, so well, you're cussing in your album. Boy, that's great. Is that because you can't come up with a better lyric than that, you know?
Right, right, exactly. As a writer's perspective, that's what I usually run into. That's
yeah.
what I usually say, because I don't think I've ever written a swear in a lyric in the, any of the songs I've ever written the lyrics for.
Yeah.
Oddly enough.
I remember I had an old mentor of mine in the Air Force, and he said to me, he said, people use curse words when they can't think of an intelligent word.
That's
true. They cannot think of an intelligent thing to say. So
yeah.
instead of saying something intelligent, they say something. They use the curse. They cuss.
Agreed. Yeah, I actually have more fun come up with alternatives, and actually they're more popular than a lot of swear words. Clownfish is probably one of my favorite words ever. It makes the most sense, and it's probably the most PG thing ever. Only if people knew what the really what the term meant, it's actually kind of comical. Because I try not to swear around the kids like you know, most parents try to kind of watch, you know, what they say or whatever, or they should be.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, it happens. But I think what's important is, you know, that, you know, you have things like that and you're observant of what you say. And you got to be careful what you say because kids hear everything and their parents. And then you can't get mad at the kids, really, if they say something, because where do they hear it from?
Yep.
You know?
Absolutely.
Now, granted,
absolutely,
they can hear it at
kids,
school, too, but the kids at school learned it from somewhere, too. Where do you think they heard it from? You know? It always goes back to something, you know?
The kid is a sponge. He's gonna suck up whatever you put out there. So if you're all you're putting out is negativity and you know foul language, then that's what the kids are gonna learn.
Right. And then when the opposite of that, when you nurture those things and you fill those things with something nice, like you know, my son wants to learn about a group, a song, I'll play him a song, and now he has that embedded in him. Now he knows what Hey You is, as far as Pink Floyd goes, or what Another Brick of the Wall is, or things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
or my daughter. And the same thing with my daughter. My daughter, like, you know, wanted to know, you know, different things about, like, voice acting and things like that, and wanted to know about Edgar Allan Poe. She's older. So I, you know, gave her the poems of Edgar Allan Poe. She loved it.
Yeah, there you go.
Different strokes, different books. But you know what, though? It's our job to show them those things. And otherwise, but also, you know, talk to them. But here's the fun part.
Yeah, exactly. Explain it to them. It's not enough just to show. You got to try to explain it to them. Explain to them, you know, this is what it was like. This is what they were doing. This is what the mistakes they made, you know?
Right. You know, one of the – Yeah. You know, one of the things that people don't know about the wrestling business, as you know, I have a background in wrestling. I had a nice cushy job on the creative side of things not long ago. But because my son was having a hard time in school and stuff, I wanted to make sure he finished school. I kind of put that on the back burner to where, you know, do the dad thing, you know, because that's what a responsible father does. But going through that and doing that, I realized that, you know, things like wrestling and sports and movies, you know, I come to realize I don't know if I could be away from my kids or not be around my kids as much as these people are now. In the wrestling business, for example, dads can go on, you know, if you ask a lot of the people, even back in the territory days, they have kids. They don't even know what their dad looked like, you know, and they miss birthdays and this, that, and the other thing. I mean, that to me, that's a sad thing ever. I'm missing my son's 20th birthday in November because I'm going to be working in doing the Cherry Hill, working for Dave. But he gets that, and he knows I'll make it up from before and after. But like, to me, that's, you know, that's tough for me to miss my kid's birthday, you know? But you know, things like, you know, music and, you know, film and wrestling. I'm amazed how people can just go on the road as long as they are and not be around their kids. Can you imagine?
That's the one thing you hear every time about all these big wrestling superstars, and you talk to their kids. You know, you talk to the kids, like, yeah, I know some of my dad during the 80s and the 90s because he was always on the road, you know?
Exactly. You know? Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes.
Dusty Rhodes, Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, another one. And the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
You know, but...
Yeah, exactly. And so it goes on to the new breed of wrestlers, Roman Reigns, you know, these guys there, and, you know... Matt and Nick and Matt Jackson, Cody Rhodes, those kids aren't going to see a lot of dad and stuff because he's going to be on the road. Because that's the life of the wrestler. That's the life, man.
Exactly.
They make a lot of money, but the thing is, that's the price you pay for making a lot of money. If you're willing to make that sacrifice, you're welcome to make that money.
Exactly.
You got to be willing to sacrifice your family to do it.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that we do with our family is once a week at least, once a month, we try to have what we call a family game night. Our kids are older now, and as they get older, they want to spend as little time with us as possible. They're getting older. But I think it's important once in a while to have that family night, that family day to play games or whatever else as a family, because that gives you the opportunity to, you know, talk with kids and stuff like that. That's what we do anywhere in our family. You know what I mean? I want to know what's going on in my kids' lives. I still talk to my kids every day, regardless of where they're doing, you know. But, you know, like when they were younger, it was, always customary. It would always take me about 3 hours to get them ready for bed because, you know, along with putting them to bed regularly, I'd have to then give them bedtime stories. As a writer, it's fun because I had to be on my toes. See, when I grew up, I had to do the dad thing for my brothers and my sister. So I'd give them the same three bedtime stories, and they were okay with it. My kids, my son always wanted a new story. My daughter the same thing, and they were opposite. My son was, my son wanted the funny adventurous wrestling stories, and my daughter wanted like the fairy tale. You know, the I used to call them the obscure family the fairy tale. Melody things that I used to tell, like the our version of Wizard of Oz or, you know, various things like that. But that's the part of being a dad, and that's the part of being a parent a lot of people miss out on. They don't get those opportunities. And just, you know, I think that, I mean, I know you have a lot to do with Tommy and stuff like that, but, like, how do you guys make sure you guys spend enough time with as a both a father and also your own time? Like, do you...
Well, every night,
by the way, there is no more time.
We always have dinner together. We always spend that time. We always sit back and we watch something together. We talk. Dinner time is kind of like our together time. And like I said, you know, he's seven, so it's not like he's going out with his friends and stuff. So it's very easy that once we're home, once work is done, you know, we're together. We're hanging out together. Even if it's just kind of like in the same room, you know, we're doing three different things. We're still just hanging and just having a good time.
Right. And that's important. You know, you need that as a family. You know what I mean? It's important for both the kids to know that you're there and as well as to spend that time, at least talking to the kids too. Now, have you ever had to deal with the problem where he's come home from school with some kind of a problem or an issue that you've had to deal with?
A couple of times, we just sit down.
What are those things? What are those fun stuff?
I mean, sometimes it's dealing with bullies. Sometimes it's dealing with, you know, school isn't going quite the way he wants to, you know. And it's just like, you know, because, you know, he's not paying enough attention. He's daydreaming too much. Little things like that. You know, you sit down, you just sit down and you talk to him, and you just sit there and explain to him. It's like, well, this is what you got to do. This is what it is. You know, with bullies, it's just like, you know, it tells us a bully is a person who's very unhappy, and they're trying to make everybody else unhappy rather than being I'm sad. I'm going to make everybody else sad. Things like that. I mean, is kind of you know, you got to simplify it, you know, at the,
sure.
You know, so he, because they can't overcomplicate the discussion by going into the deep, you know,
exactly.
ramifications of what they're thinking and what their motivation is for doing this. No, it's like, you know, so no, they're sad. And instead of trying to make themselves happy, they just try to make everybody else sad, which is kind of like, you know, that's always been the best analogy I could come up with. A bully is someone who's very sad, and instead of trying to, you know, what makes them feel happier is when they're making other people sad too. So they say
right.
bad things, and they say bad things, and they, you know, they call people names, things like that, you know, so.
Right. Good way to look at it. You know, that's an important thing, because you've got to go by how old the people are that you're talking to. But they do understand, and they can follow along. It's just a matter of talking to them, you know.
Yeah.
Now, do you guys have the thing where, like, he goes to mom for some things and you for other things, or is it pretty much whoever's there at the time?
Well, it depends. If he is scared of something, he comes to me. Daddy's the one who's the monster killer. He's the guy who plays the monster. But if he's if it's like an emotional thing, he goes to mommy. If he doesn't feel good or something like that, that's mommy. You know, I got a tummy ache. I'm feeling sad because my friend said something to me. If he sits there and says, "Oh, this scared me, Daddy," I'm like, "Okay, well, let's take a look at it." It's like, "Oh yeah, don't worry about it." You know, You know. Dad handles that. So, he has to go and do something scary, like he's going to the dentist or something. It's like, I'm right here with you, buddy. I'm right here with you the whole time. Just look at me. I'm right here with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm there. Like, you squeeze my hand if it hurts and stuff like that. You know, you're gonna be fine. And you know, that's the kind of things that Dad does. If he's scared about something, if Daddy's there, he's brave. You know?
Right.
I bring up the brave quotient with him when I'm around.
Makes sense. Now, have you guys had to deal with nightmares yet or no?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He gets them every once in a while, yeah. Not all the time, but he gets them.
Yeah, how do you
sometimes
guys deal with those?
He'll see something that scares him, or he'll watch something and then he dreams about it, and it scares him in the dream. Well, it didn't necessarily scare him when he was sleeping, you know, like he was watching it, but he got scared when he was sleeping and had his dream. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I have to ask you this, because this is a fun thing my wife and I think is funny in a lot of these horror movies. As far as from the parents' perspective, I know you watch a lot of horror movies too, so you can relate to this. How many times have you seen a movie where how many times have you seen in movies where the kids tell the parents, "Hey, there's a ghost in our house," or "this house is haunted. I'm seeing a ghost."
Yeah.
"There's a monster in the closet routine."
How many times have you seen
that? You're like, "Why? There's obviously something wrong here." And now, obviously, probably haven't had that.
Oh yeah, I call it the Chucky factor, the Chucky from Child's Play. I'm like, sorry, it's like the parents have to be in these movies. They drive me crazy because they have to be the stupidest people on the earth, planet Earth.
Yeah,
because I'm sorry,
100%.
People I knew were disappearing, and I didn't know what was happening to them. And it's like, yo, Gigala, Bobby Sue. Bobby Joe and Billy Sue are missing. I don't know what happened to them, and they keep disappearing. But my son keeps coming up to me and saying that his doll is getting up and killing people. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to grab the damn doll, put it in a trash can, douse it in lighter fluid, and burn the doll to ash.
Right.
End of the Chucky franchise. And but the parents, they have to be idiots. It's just like, you know, this guy's in my dreams, and he's killing me. He's killing my friends in their dreams. And it's like, these people are dying. So I was like, well, then let's see what we can do. Let's find another way so we can protect you when you're dreaming. Because something is happening. I don't know what it is, but, you know, it's just like they have to be the dumbest parents. And they just don't give a crap. It's like, oh, gee, you know, all these people died at this summer camp. I know, I'm going to send my kid to that summer camp. What are you, retarded? It's like, did your brain suddenly, did you suddenly go through a lobotomy? Did you have the, it's like, I have to give you credit. You look amazing for having a full frontal lobotomy. You know, because you can't be that, that's not even stupidity. It's just, I understand they have to be written that way, but it's just like, it's like I said, because you wouldn't have a movie. If the mom had listened to the kid in the first Child's Play movie, it would have been over in 20 minutes.
Yeah, true. Very true.
Chucky's doing all these bad things. You know what? Okay, so Chucky's a bad guy, huh? I was like, okay, let me take the Chucky doll. Chunk, here you go, right through the, I'll throw it into a grinder or something, you know. Here you go. I'll burn it up. You know,
problem. We're responsible parents. We actually take things to heart, you know.
Yeah. It's like, my kid is telling me something like that. It's like, that's the thing, and I get it. The kid is there to kind of be cute, to be like he's supposed to be like the danger. You're supposed to be like, oh, God, please don't let anything bad happen to the little child. You know, but the thing is, parents have to be the dumbest people ever. Not
every single
movie.
Because
I'm like,
every single one of them. They drive me nuts. Yeah. I'm like,
anytime you're dealing with kids, no matter how old the kids are. Because, like I said, I think the parents are just as idiotic in The Nightmare on Elm Street as they were in Child's Play.
Even
like,
more so.
The kids are telling you something's going on. Even more so, because I'm like, the kids are older. They're not children. They're teenagers.
Right.
They're almost graduating high school. They're young adults. And you're sitting there completely blowing them off. They're 3 years old and they saw a shadow under their bed. It's like, you know, give them some credit.
Right.
But the thing is,
it's not as dumb as we think they are.
If the people are sensible, then the movie doesn't work anymore.
That's true.
The parents have to be stupid. That's the only way the movie is going to work. The parent has to be an idiot.
Right.
Which is like, oh, don't ever ask me to play that kind of person because, you know, it was kind of like, it's like the Sarah Michelle Gellar thing when she was in Scream 2 when the killer jumped out in the ghost face mask with the knife. Her first reaction was right cross to the jaw. And Wes Craven's like, no, Sarah, you can't kill him. Otherwise, I can't do another sequel. And it's like, no. He's like, oh, that's right. I forgot I have to play the victim. I can't play this the way I would normally play it, which is I would beat the living crap out of this idiot jumping out of the shadows at me because I know how to defend myself.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm with you on that one, too. I'm over that whole as much as I love horror movies, I don't just watch movies, I study them. And my wife and I watch these people, I'm like, what the heck are you doing that for? And horror movies even more so because there's so many more tropes in horror movies than a lot of other films. The parents are dumb, the police force are morons. Nightmare on Elm Street you bring up, right?
Yeah.
You have a bunch of older teenagers who are telling you that this guy is killing them. How about the fact that they wouldn't really know who that guy was? The fact they're bringing up this guy's name should be a red flag to a parent, especially if they know, why they wouldn't have a recollection of who that person is.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
and it's like, and they're dying. That's the key thing. It's just like, it's like the kid. I'm like. It's like, well, she said these terrible things are happening. Oh, gosh, she's just a dumb kid. And then next thing you know, she's flying up in the air in a little topsy-turvy thing on the ceiling of her room, getting sliced and diced. And they think the boyfriend did it. I'm like, really? The boyfriend put her on the ceiling of her room and then gutted her in the air, somehow held her up, somehow got her on the ceiling, then held her there and then gutted her? Seriously?
On the ceiling. Yeah, right.
On the ceiling. Or Johnny's death in the film. It's like, so it's perfectly natural. Someone got sucked into their bed and came out as a freaking geyser of blood.
Yeah.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever you say there, hero.
so many of those.
The thing is,
you know, the next time you come on the show,
the only way they work is that the adults and authority figures are morons. That's the only way they work. The only way they work in those films. It helps.
It's
the thing
oddly enough,
it's
usually the
Nightmare
kids who are the smartest ones. Oddly enough,
was an alcoholic. Ronnie Lee Blakely's character was an alcoholic. You know, Nancy's mom was an alcoholic.
Right.
So it made her incompetent because she was always drunk. So she wasn't capable of you know, intelligent thought.
Oh man, there's
like
so many
bars and windows.
You know what we should do is one of these shows we should have you come on here, right? And we're gonna sit here and before we come back on, we're gonna do this thing. We're gonna take a notepad out. We're gonna watch several films. Could be anyone, and
okay.
Then we're gonna go over all of the tropes. Would you be game for that? That's a challenge.
Okay.
And what we'll do is game out of it. We'll what they do in the movie and what we would rationally do in reality. Or what would make a better idea? What do you think of that idea?
The tricky factor. Yeah, exactly. I think it's a great idea. As long as I got the movie, I'm one happy to watch it.
Well, I mean, we can even take a few different films. That way, they will be fair. So that way, we can make sure we get these tropes down.
Okay.
Or whatever, and we'll just dissect them like I normally do.
Yeah.
We can even take the pop culture ones that everyone sees.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm game. I'm down for it.
Because I think that'd be fun because you know a lot about horror, as I do. And I think we can't be the only sensible parents out there who look at things like, what's wrong with you, parents? If my kid tells me that they see someone dead in the room or they see a ghost, listen, the reality of it is, in real life, people who can do those things, most of the time, it's young people who can see those things. It's not usually adults.
Yeah.
That's historically speaking.
They're more aware of it. They're more aware of their surroundings. And they're more sensitive to them.
Right. And parents sit there and they dissect everything. But not in these movies they don't. These movies, the kids will say, hey, it's haunted. And the parents are like, no, definitely not.
Oh, what do you do? You have no idea what you're talking about, Jimmy.
Yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. There's no, you couldn't possibly understand.
Why?
You definitely didn't see a ghost.
Why did you stack the furniture in the living room like that when I wasn't looking? So you're saying that picked up two couches and the 500-pound television and stacked it?
Yeah.
Okay, good job there.
Parent
of the Year award goes to.
How about the fact they bought it? Once they found out they were on an Indian burial ground, I think a sensible parent would probably, try to figure out why not to be there, or two, move.
Oh, yeah, we just moved because we moved the cemetery. Sure you did.
Yeah. Right. Oh, man.
It's good
stuff.
Good move, dude.
We love horror movies. We do. It's just sometimes these people in these movies give parents a bad name, really. I think sometimes, we're not that dumb.
No. But some of the some of the formulas are just really idiotic,
And outdated. Personally, if I was going to make a movie, a horror movie, I would do the opposite of all that. I would rather than make a movie where sensible things would happen. It would still be scary as hell because, let's face it, reality is scary. But I don't see I think it would be terrifying if you're just using sensibility because, The Conjuring. Did you see The Conjuring?
No, I have not. I'm not a big ghost story guy. I like monster movies. I'm not a big ghost story guy.
I gotcha. Like the Amityville Horror, you're not into those either, right?
I've seen the original. I've seen some of the sequels. Yeah, I've seen the original Amityville Horror and Amityville 2, Amityville 3. I didn't see the reboot one they did with Ryan Reynolds, but, I've seen a lot.
I did, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But that's still one of those movies. Oh, no, nothing's wrong here until, when you absolutely need to,
I never saw the reboot for the Texas Chainsaw Massacre films. I've seen the original, and I've seen two or three of the sequels, but that's about it.
Right. Speaking of, what about Jaws? Have you seen Jaws? Of course you've seen Jaws,
oh,
right?
Jaws. I love Jaws.
Jaws is my favorite film.
I feel like Jaws is probably my Jaws is probably the out of all of the movies, I think Jaws might be the only one that is probably the most, well, I guess it's not realistic in the sense that you have a shark that's hunting people down, but
yeah.
You know, I think what the problem is that movie just, it was meant to scare people. I don't think they quite figured that they would, you know, force people never to walk in the boat, the beach again.
Yeah. Well,
like my wife
was,
won't go in the ocean anymore because of Jaws.
I'm not a beach. I don't like the beach, and that's pretty much because of Jaws. I'll freely admit that. Jaws affected how I feel about going to the beach. Going swimming in the ocean, and I'm not a fan of it. You know, it's just I'm not a fan of swimming. Period. Now, because and I think Jaws has a lot to do with that. But it's a great film because it's one of those rare films that has the flaws it had actually enhanced it. Things that people are like, you know, it's like what are you talking about? It's like, well, like the shark. The shark took forever to build. They were shooting.
Yeah.
They had shot 2/3 of the film without a shark because it wasn't ready yet.
Yeah.
And that enhanced. So when you finally did see the shark, you're like, "Holy crap! Look at that thing!"
Right. It's that old, you know, wait till the end. And then it was. The other thing happens is you wait for the build of seeing whatever it is, and it's like, "Oh, that's it." Sometimes not seeing whatever it is that's being scary is the scariest thing of all.
Yeah.
The idea of it.
Mm-hmm. Because it's your imagination. Your imagination is better than anything that Hollywood can build.
Sure. Exactly. Ask Stephen King about it. He knows all about it all too well.
Oh, yeah.
How often has he written something and he wants it you to see whatever he writes, which, you know, that's why he writes the way he does. Not everyone likes Stephen King, though, for that reason.
Yeah, well, that's because he does. That's why he likes some of his stuff not being made in the films, because he's like, I'd much rather have your vision of it, not somebody else's vision, and then it becomes the vision. He's like, my vision of Pennywise is vastly different from what you see in the movies, because that's my imagination. And it's like when I read it, Pennywise didn't look like Tim Curry or the guy who played him in the most recent film. I'm like,
there was no shape. He was not. He wasn't just a clown. He was multiple things. He was
all sorts of things in the books. He was, you know, they kicked off on the clown because everybody likes the clown because the clown was creepier.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So for me, it was like when I thought of the clown, I'm like, I saw Bozo the clown because that was the most famous clown I knew. I didn't see the clown Kim Curry was. You know, now, of course, I do, because that's the vision you've been given thanks to the films, you know. But at the same time, like I said, I think that your imagination is better than anything that Hollywood's going to create.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's why, you know, a lot of people, I think that's one of the reasons why Stephen King, for example, is more even outspoken about when his movies are made into, his books are made into films. Where people are, you know, usually give him a lot of flack because he doesn't like some of the things, he clashed with people because of whatever. But in the same sense, the other thing can be said is, well, he doesn't necessarily have to give him the rights to make it either. But
no,
in the same sense, I can get that as yeah, exactly. It's true. He is. But, Legend he hated Shining. He liked the new one. You know, he liked the new It. I don't really know what his pants was in the other one. You know, one of the good things
He liked the first part, but he didn't like the second. He's kind of like the same thing with me. I always liked the first part when it was the kids because the threat level was higher for me. When they were adults, I didn't have as much investor in it.
Yeah,
so it's like when they did the I really liked the first one, and I thought the second one was okay. And I realized because, like I said, I'm just not as invested in the adults.
Sure, you get that.
You know,
because adults aren't in peril like kids are. You know, I mean, that's why it's terrifying when you can relate to that. You know,
because you see yourself.
But, I mean,
you see yourself. You see see yourself being that kid.
Because exactly. And
the kids were every kid. They were all
and then the other,
like every, they were,
yeah, exactly. And the other thing is, as a parent, you watch these things, and you're like, oh, my God, I hope that doesn't happen to that poor kid. I mean, speaking now, changing the subject on horror now, how many movies, what are the things that, all of us have watched movies or whatever at some point of ourselves. Have you ever watched a film that has made you cry?
A horror film?
Or in general. Have you ever seen a film that made you cry as an adult?
No. I've seen – the last time I cried in a movie theater was when Spock died at the end of Star Trek II.
The original?
The original Star Trek II, the original Spock, the original Star Trek II, the Wrath of Khan, when Spock dies at the end of that film and he has his final saying, where he has his final, finally he says his last words to James Kirk, to James T. Kirk, Bill Shatner, and – that I bawled my eyes out. My mom was like, oh my God, I actually missed the rest of the movie because I don't remember the rest of the movie. I had to go back and see it again just so I could pick up on, oh, okay, so that's what happened after Spock died. Because I was busy crying to realize, they shot him out of a torpedo and he landed and all this other stuff. And then, of course, they fixed it all in the third movie. But still, it was, for me, it was just like, that was the most, that was unbelievable. That was, like I said, that one. I mean, I've gotten choked up watching films, but actual crying, I would have to say the last time I did that was in Star Trek II.
I haven't actually cried in a film in forever, but when it comes to, like, kids stuff, I find that I am there's some things I get a little swelled up, and I might get a little sad about and whatnot. I know I get a little choked up with certain things. Uh-huh. When it comes to kids, there's a song by Alan. It was the song I danced with my daughter at our wedding. It was Tough Little Boys. What's his name? Anyway, it's a song called Tough Little Boys. It's a country song, which I don't like country music, traditionally speaking. But this song, I don't know if you've ever heard it. Alan Jackson. No, it's not Alan Jackson. Anyway, it's Tough Little Boys is the name of the song. And, it's one of those songs that, one of my workouts is when I walk around, I sing out loud when I walk around town and stuff like that. It's just how I keep cardio in general. Whenever it comes to that song, I can sing most of it. But you know what? Just being the dad that I am. And, the story and, having my kids succeed and watch, that's probably the biggest thing that gets me is watching my kids succeed or seeing my kids overly happy. Obviously to see them in pain, obviously too, but that doesn't happen often, I hope. But, I don't know for you, your perspective of it is, but how do you guys deal with tears and whatnot in your house? In general, is it acceptable for the dad to cry, or is it, whatnot? Like the old trope, when we were growing up, if your dad cries, he's weak. Where do you stand on that?
No. I don't do anything like that. I mean, I don't cry because I'm not. I internalize my emotions more, and that goes back to my military days, back to my military training and days. You learn to internalize, your problems more, and I never would tell my son that just because someone's being emotional and, they're crying about something doesn't make them weak. Crying is not weakness. It's like, you cry because you're sad or you're in pain. There's a reason for it, And, I've never criticized or said something bad about anybody, because they're crying and stuff. It's like, no, that's not.
Right.
Like I said, and unfortunately, my son will probably turn out like that too because I'm going to be his biggest example. But I've said, basically, I just tend to internalize a lot of my stuff more. I don't kind of vomit it out into the world like some people do. because I just kind of like focus on the thing.
I get that. I'm kind of the same way. That's just because of how I'm kind of, you know, I feel empathy. I feel sadness. I don't show it, which is, you know, one of those things about, you know, me and people in general, like, you know, that whole thing. You know, it's a coping mechanism we just have. We adapt, you know.
We all deal with things differently, you know. Our generation tended to be more the guy, more internalized.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, we went out there and was like we were, you know, it's just like I said, it's just the way we were raised. It's the way we are. It's like, you know, people do different things. You know,
mm-hmm.
Other people come more freely than I do, and I'm like, I get that. My wife does, you know. You know, I'm not big on that. I'm not, you know, my wife will see something really sad or something makes her really happy, and she'll cry about it, and it'll be like,
right.
You know, oh, there's something wrong with that.
Right.
You know.
My wife's very emotional like that, too. She has her moments of crying. I think it's adorable. I call it adorable. I do, and, you know, it is. But, you know, I'll tell you, though, watching, like, the one of the things that gets me close to crying but not actually crying is, like, watching those Soldier Come Home videos because
it
goes back to that whole being away from my kids long enough, whatever. I'm like, oh, my God, I can't. You know what I mean? Those are just tough.
I didn't have kids when I came back from the first Gulf War. But I remember that. I remember my homecoming. It's like, you know, I remember my family, you know. I remember I came back and my family were all looking around for me and no one recognized me because I looked so different from when I left, you know. So, but I remember that. So it's always, like I said, it's always wonderful to see that when you see a family, a group of a kid seeing their dad or the wife seeing the husband.
When their dad surprises his kids at school who hasn't seen him like 3 years. Like, oh no, I get close.
That's just
Then my wife looks at me and laughs.
It's a hard life. I tell people, it's like military is not. It's not an easy life, and I don't sit there and. I don't ever sell it that. I'm like, yeah, it's the hardest thing, but it's the best thing I ever did in my life because it made me do who I am today. Mm-hmm. But it's also, there are easier ways to get there than the path I took. So you don't have to go the path I took to get to where I'm at. You know, you can, trust me, you can find an easier path. I take my word for it.
It's right. Absolutely. I wasn't able to join the military. They wouldn't let me. But I can relate.
Yeah.
So. Well, Tim, we're almost there, believe it or not. Can you believe that?
Oh, wow.
As always. But it's been literally a lot of good times, always, as it always is, talking about dad. Do you have any, like, closing moments or anything last you want to say about, you know, being a dad, your thoughts on Father's Day or what it means to you particularly?
Well, you know, the day isn't so much to celebrate, you know, it's like, it's not celebrating the fact that you made a kid, it's to celebrate that you're raising a kid, you know,
exactly.
That's what makes a father proud. You know, like we said at the beginning of the show, any schmuck can make a baby, but it takes a real man to be a father and raise the baby and hopefully put that baby on the right path to him or her becoming a good person. So that's something that's what you strive for. That's what Father's Day is about. It's not a celebration of, you know, I made a baby. So what? Did you raise the child? Did you help that child become a good person? Are they equipped to face the challenges that the world's going to throw at them? Or at least know how to face those challenges or when to turn for help for those challenges. Did you do that? If you didn't do it, then no, this day is not for you. Because all you were was a sperm donor, and that's all that, and that's not something
that's to
celebrate.
That's what I refer to it as well. I'd say the same thing. That's what I refer to those people as. Awesome.
Amen.
Well, Tim, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, as always. And next time we have you on, we're going to try that little horror challenge thingy.
Absolutely.
I will be in touch with you and we'll you know, maybe we'll pick a few films and compare notes on the next time we get together. Sometime this summer we can do the beach day. Not a beach day, but a camping day or something of that nature with our family.
Yeah.
We're not too far away from each other. Excellent.
No,
well,
kidding.
Tim, have a great night, and may all your dreams come true. It's great having you on the show. Happy Father's Day.
Happy Father's Day to you and all the fathers out there. You all have a great time.
Thank you. You as well, my friend. And tell everyone I said hello.
I will. You do the same.
All right, Tim. Have a great night, Farley. Thanks.
You too. Bye-bye.